What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the 23rd anniversary Too Jewish radio show and podcast with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends. It's a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today. News, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, our guest is Shana Fold, creator and host of the Israeli Daily podcast. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the hosts and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. This morning, we're celebrating the 23rd anniversary of this 2 Jewish radio show and podcast, an accomplishment we're very proud of indeed. In celebration of 1,203 editions of 2 Jewish, providing the very best of Jewish radio and podcasts anywhere for more than two full decades, nearly two and a half, we're now officially ready for a champagne toast to start. L'chaim for 23 full years of everything Jewish and interesting brought to you weekly right here on the radio and by podcast with never a single repeated episode. Actually, we finally had one repeat episode 7 years ago after a travel and medical emergency. Still, pretty darn good record, no? Here on 2 Jewish, we've been providing Jewish inspiration, news, humor, music, Torah, and shtick, as well as interviewing the most important and interesting figures throughout the Jewish world every week for more than two full decades. We pledge always to provide the finest Jewish programming we can. Now, 2 Jewish began with an idea on a June day back in the year 2002. After some casual discussion about, oh, maybe we should do a radio show, I was told, you're starting the first Sunday in August. Starting what? I asked. A one-hour show. I booked the first 13-week block. I gulped, and over the next few weeks, started planning the show. Everything came together quickly. We lined up guests, regular commentators, mavens to be on the show, got our first sponsors, and figured out how to play musical cuts and do jokes. But we had a big problem. We did not have a name for our new radio show. We threw out a number of possible names. All Jews Considered got some votes. Fresh Jewish Air, not so much. One recommendation was that we should call the show Chopped Liver. So when somebody criticized us, and if Jews are listening, somebody's criticizing, we could say, what are we, Chopped Liver? My personal favorite was Deli Home Companion, but the lawyers told us we'd get sued, and we try to listen to our lawyers, who are, of course, Jewish. For a while, we called the not-yet-on-the-air show Shema Yisrael, Hear, O Israel. I mean, it was Jewish. You got to listen to it, and that's very central to how Jews think about things. That name, Shema Yisrael, was Tom Price's suggestion, as I recall, who has been with us for the whole of our very long run. The quote, of course, is from Deuteronomy 6. Hear, Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, one God, indivisible, for liberal and conservative Jews, both. So, for a while, that was the working name of the show. But every time we told somebody we're going to call our new radio show Shema Yisrael, they said the same thing. That's okay, but it's too Jewish. Or Shema Yisrael, good name. It's Hebrew, though, and frankly, it's too Jewish. After five or six dozen comments like that, we got the idea. Not only was our show title too Jewish, but maybe the show title ultimately had to be too Jewish, because our focus on too Jewish has always been exploring what it means to be fully Jewish in complex times, and that's what we've been, too Jewish, ever since August 4th, 2002. You know, when we started Too Jewish, our goal was to reach out, entertain, and intrigue anybody and everybody interested in Jewish life, ethics, culture, contemporary events, history, Israel, music, films, books, food, art, holidays, humor, anything and everything Jewish. Too Jewish was designed for Jews of all denominations and flavors, of course, but also to help people who aren't Jewish learn about and be inspired by the fabulous religion and culture of Judaism. By exploring all aspects of Jewish life and living, without limiting ourselves to one movement or ethnic or national identity, we hoped we could explain what Judaism really is in the 21st century, which was a much newer century when we started than it is now, a quarter of the way through. That means explaining what Judaism has been for nearly 4,000 years and continues to be today and for the foreseeable future. As Fiddler on the Roof taught us all, tradition. Now on Too Jewish, we're going to explain and teach and celebrate and joke about Jewish tradition. And we wanted to make it referable to our discerning audience, broadly, with intelligence and humor. But a funny thing happened on the way to the studio. We discovered that contemporary Jewish life is about much more than just tradition. It is also consistently about innovation. New and exciting things happen everywhere in the Jewish world nearly all the time. Judaism is very much about the process of engaging a great tradition with the best of contemporary life on a constant basis. It's this dynamic process, the continuing evolution of our 3,800-plus-year-old religion into something fresh and new that's at the heart of Jewish survival and thriving. And that has made creating Too Jewish each and every week for 23 years a continual surprise and an ongoing delight. For 1,203 shows, 1,203 consecutive shows. To play us in on this celebratory morning, here's something a little traditional, a Shehechianu, the Jewish prayer for all good and new things, by Meir Machtenberg, as sung by past two Jewish guests, cantor Alberto Mizrahi. Blessed are you, God, who gives us life, sustains us, brings us to such a happy occasion, and we play it nearly annually on our anniversary. That was cantor Alberto Mizrahi, the great Chazan, and the Western Winds singing the prayer, thanking God for celebrations, the Shehechianu, for our 23rd anniversary of Too Jewish right here this morning. When we come back in a moment on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our friend Shanna Fuld, creator and host of the Israel Daily News podcast, whose home was destroyed by an Iranian missile during the recent war just last month. Hear from Shanna from Israel in a moment when we come back on Too Jewish. We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish our good friend Shanna Fuld. She's the host of the Israel Daily News podcast, and she had a really awful experience during the Iran war. Welcome back, first of all. Good morning.
Thank you.
So tell us about your experience. You know, start from the beginning.
Well, my experience is that I've been covering the war and been studying Iran for years since I arrived to Israel in 2018. And things got very real for our country and got very real for me. Especially since October 7th, I've been having some visions of an Iranian attack and what that would look like. And I've found myself repeatedly putting things away or closing curtains or closing windows in my home because I had this vision, this repeated vision of my big window in my apartment shattering or unfortunately, I've had these visions of a really big bomb or explosive from Iran. And the reason for that is because I'm very educated and I read a lot and I know Iran's intentions. And that actually became my reality on June 16th, Sunday night into Monday morning. I was up late working on a report for the Israel Daily News, which is my news outlet. And at that point, we had been for about 4 days with Iranian ballistic missiles attacking Israel, particularly in the center. And they were sending so many missiles, and some of them were actually hitting and striking and not being intercepted by the Iron Dome. And one of them hit in Bat Yam, which is a city outside of Tel Aviv, and I made it my business to go over there and report on the destruction. And what I had found that afternoon that I went was that not only was the destruction really severe, but it was very widespread. For several blocks, east, north, southwest, in each direction, homes had their windows shattered, a lot of homes were broken, and that's when I really understood how dangerous these missiles are. And on my way back from this report, it was already nighttime. I had spent a lot more time there than I had anticipated. And we got a missile alert. I was on a scooter. I had to scoot over and drop it and run into a shelter in Jaffa, which was an experience that I haven't really spoken much about, but it was interesting because there were Jews and Arabs sitting together shielding from the Iranian attack, and you just saw a little bit of each different type of culture and society in that public shelter. You saw women in hijabs. You saw men in sandals with clothes on because they had just come from the beach. Jews, you saw everybody, and everybody was sheltering and waiting, and we were there for a while. And then I went back to my home, and I got safely into my apartment, which was no small feat. We were having multiple attacks a day that were causing us to need to run to the shelter. Keep in mind that we don't have to run to the shelter if the IDF is able to, with certainty, stop the missile or intercept the missile. The ones that are making their way into our, through the atmosphere and down into our cities, that's when we have to run. And so, and we were having that several times a day, which was a lot. So we were running. We were running at 4 o'clock in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and in the evening. And so I made it back and I was standing in my personal bedroom. And I thought to myself, when is it going to be me? What is going to happen to this apartment if I stay here? Is it safe for me to stay here? And I thought about my home being destroyed. And again, I had been taking these random precautions that I hadn't really been telling anyone about because, you know, we all do our thing inside the home and we don't always tell everybody the way, the knife that we choose in the kitchen or the way that we close the door to the restroom. But my thing was that whenever I left my home, I took my laptop off of my dining room table. I would put it in its cover, a pouch with a zipper, and I would rest it behind my couch so that, God forbid, those windows were to blow in, the laptop would be in some way protected. And I'm very, very lucky because we did get an alarm. Right after I hit publish, it was 3:50 in the morning. I had been up all night working on this report because it was very timely. You know, I had to get this report out because each day we were having rockets fall. And unfortunately, I understood that if I didn't have the weekend report of the Bat Yam, that by the next day there would be a new place that was destroyed and a new report to do. So I stayed up all night. 3:50 a.m., I had already gotten a rocket alert from 2 hours ago. I had gone up to the safe room in my neighbor's home because my apartment did not have one, and because the public shelter was a four-minute walk away, and I just didn't feel safe. It was very late. I had been up already at that time to my neighbor's apartment, and I had decided that I was waiting. There was no siren because at this point the IDF was giving us about 5 to 8 minutes warning that there was going to be a siren for those of us like myself that don't have a protected space inside the apartment and for those of us that need to get to a public shelter. That night, there was some kind of issue with the system where they warned us 2 hours in advance, and then there was nothing. So I took a gamble finishing my report, which I recorded probably at 2 o'clock in the morning. I came back down to my apartment, I finished the recording, I went upstairs, I sat, nothing happened. I came back downstairs, I edited the show, I sent it out, I decided that nothing had happened, we had had no siren, and I started changing into my pajamas. The second I started to relax and change into my pajamas, that's when the siren rang out. I had taken off my hiking boots, which I wore strategically to the site of the Bat Yam, and my cargo pants because I knew there was going to be a lot of glass. And at this point, I was in my pajama pants, and I had to grab some open-toed sandals. I had just finished reporting to the public that the Israel police is
after. So when you hear that siren, how long do you have?
When you hear the siren, you have 90 seconds.
Wow. Grabbed what you had and headed for the shelter. We will continue. I hate to break. Well, I kind of like to break right at the moment, but we will come back in just a moment on Two Jewish with Shanna Fold and hear what happened on the rest of that night and in the subsequent days when we come back here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a wonderful array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established almost 7 years ago by terrific congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us tonight, this Sunday, August 3rd, at the Unscrewed Theater here in Tucson for a fantastic evening of musical improvisation. It's called Pastrami and Schmaltz, kosher pastrami or salami, deli sandwiches, salads, drinks, preceded by a fabulous night of fun musical improv with the From the Top players and a guest star, me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Now, I'm not sure how I got talked into doing this. I've never done any improv, but we'll find out tonight if I can. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. It's at the Unscrewed Theater, Speedway near Swan, at 6 p.m. tonight. And join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests always. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is, well, signing people up now for school-age children or grandchildren. Join us in our Torah Tykes program for the youngest kids, Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with fabulous Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to all. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. Email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org if you've got any questions, or, well, come in person or just show up on our Facebook page.
Shabbat services Friday night are at 6:30 p.m. If you come in person, there's a delicious Oneg Shabbat afterwards. Saturday, Shabbat morning Torah studies at 9 a.m., services at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is BEITSIMCHA Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, including Torah study, are live and on Zoom. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. For more about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, adult Bar and Bat Mitzvah, new class starting in a couple weeks, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. And come to Pastrami and Schmaltz tonight at 6 at the Unscrewed Theater. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, as always, email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America. According to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating. Review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments all help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. There's a subject we must address this morning. The elephant in the room among those of us, deeply devoted and committed supporters of Israel. Here at Too Jewish, and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, personally have always been and remain proud and vocal Zionists. In the past 21 months, we've supported Israel and its citizens and armed forces through the trauma, tragedy, and triumph of war with the brutal terrorists of Hamas, the Hezbollah terrorists of Lebanon, the Houthi terrorists of Yemen, the Islamist terrorist state of Iran, and the civil war terrorists on both sides of that civil war in Syria. I have gone to Israel during this time, raised funds for its humanitarian needs, publicized its struggles to maintain humanity and preserve life during a brutal war. We have worked to counteract the well-funded propaganda of terrorist sympathizers and apologists, corrected the many lies spread about Israel, often by anti-Semites, answered every challenge to its carefully structured responses that have turned the course of the war and brought Israel to a much stronger place than it has been in a long time. And there is no doubt Israel has had to fight a horrible war in Gaza, forced on it by the war criminals of Hamas, who slaughtered, tortured, raped, and kidnapped civilians to create the disaster that has ensued for its own people, the Gaza Palestinians. Hamas insists on prolonging the conflict as long as possible, continuing to refuse to release the 23 living Israeli hostages, possibly still alive, after 630 days of horrible captivity, and which also refuses to release the bodies of the 30 or so Israelis it is ghoulishly holding on to. It's also completely true that Hamas has long used food as a weapon, has stolen the food aid sent into the Gaza territory, using it to extort Palestinians into working for it and even fighting for it, sold that food at black market prices, and generally weaponized food aid to the profound detriment of all Palestinians in Gaza. Throughout this terrible conflict, Israel has generally provided the food that kept Gaza Palestinians alive, even though it is quite literally fighting a war against the Hamas terrorists who hold sway there. And we know that starvation in Gaza has been predicted, to our certain knowledge, ever since January of 2024, but it hasn't materialized, really, until now. The images remain in people's minds, and the issue is getting more problematic by the day as the tragedy deepens. Israel, unfortunately, must resolve this and allow more food into Gaza, and do so now. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been talking about Turkey, an important country in the Middle East, and one which has, as we said, as you said last week, I think we all understand, has become at least officially much more anti-Semitic and, in fact, anti-Israel ever since October 7th, 2023, which historically has had a good relationship with Israel and has had a significant Jewish population, not always giant, but still significant and ancient and important.
Right.
What is this kind of turn to the Islamist bent of Erdogan and his party mean for Jews living in Turkey and for the relationship with Israel?
Well, a couple of things. First, on the official level, Israel and Turkey withdrew their ambassadors to each other's countries a while ago. I don't think they completely closed their embassies, but withdrawing ambassadors is a sign of official displeasure in the diplomatic world. Not a good sign. Second, I don't know if they completely eliminated flights between Israel and Turkey or they just severely reduced them. But that used to be a huge aviation market because Israelis love going to the resorts on the south coast of Turkey, and Turkish construction workers depended on those flights to get to their jobs in Israel.
And as a frequent visitor to Turkey and, of course, Israel many times over the years, I took that flight a lot of times. It's a short flight, I don't know, less than 2 hours.
Many people do.
And Turkey, it's nobody thought anything of it. You didn't worry about it or anything. It was a very popular experience.
Yeah, I don't know that those flights have been totally eliminated, but they have been drastically reduced at the very least. And the other thing is probably important to point out that places with large concentrations of Jews, like Istanbul and Izmir, are in the West, and they are among the most liberal cities in Turkey. The two may not be unrelated, but it's clear that those are not bastions of popular support for Erdogan and his political line. So locally, at least, Jews in those communities still get along with their neighbors. They may be keeping a slightly lower profile. They may have, heightened security measures in their synagogues and community centers, but they are not under immediate threat from their neighbors because of the nature of the populations of those Western cities. Erdogan's base is in rural central Anatolia. So politically, those people might be in a difficult position in terms of national politics, but in terms of living with their neighbors in their communities in the Western cities, they're fine. And in the areas that are really hotbeds of Erdogan support and sort of fundamentalism and rednecks, there have never been large Jewish communities there or even a significant Jewish presence of any sort. So I don't think there's any immediate danger to the Jews living in Turkey, but it's certainly a place where I would be more cautious than I would have been 20 years ago about wearing like a Magen David around my neck in public.
Sure. Or a kippah or whatever, it's
right.
I will say, for all of the rhetoric, and this is maybe a little bit of an illuminating point, there have been several terrorist plots aimed at Israelis in Turkey that the Turkish Secret Service has foiled, and it's become public in the last year. So this is even right after October 7th. I mean, they still don't want trouble. They are still protecting people.
Those have been aimed at Israelis, not at Turkish Jews.
Correct. But it's interesting that the Turks have foiled them. You know, they didn't let them happen. They stopped that. And they informed the Mossad about it, too, apparently.
Well, and the Turkish government has always had a very strong position against terrorism because...
Well, they're subject to Kurdish terrorism on a regular basis.
There are various Kurdish groups which right the Turkish government labels as terrorist groups, and they've been guilty of bombings, and they used to attack, like, Turkish airline offices in L.A. and stuff like that. They were really international in their scope.
Right.
And so Turkey has traditionally taken a very hard stand against terrorism in any form.
Yeah, and I might also add, before that, there were Armenian groups who did the, kind of remembering the Armenian genocide. So you're right, they're anti-terrorist. Tom, thanks so much. Really appreciate that survey of Turkey. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Saul and Chaim are walking down the street together. Suddenly, Saul grabs his hat off his head and holds it in front of his face. In a panicked whisper, he says to Chaim, "Oy vey, Izmir, don't look in front. Here comes my wife and my mistress together." But Chaim looks up instinctively and then grabs his own hat and puts it in front of his face and says, "Oy vey, mine too." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin the great final book of the Torah, Devarim or Deuteronomy, also called Mishneh Torah. The people of Israel have arrived at the very borders of the promised land of Canaan, and our great leader Moses begins a long sermon, actually three, that will carry us forward through the whole book of Deuteronomy. If you thought some rabbis' sermons were too long-winded, try this. Moses' first speech in Devarim, Deuteronomy, starts this Shabbat and doesn't conclude until next week. And that's the shortest of his sermons in Deuteronomy. Moses begins by employing that most Jewish of all devices, guilt. God has led our people to the very borders of the promised land, taken care of all of the Israelites' physical needs, worked wonders and miracles for them, and yet, repeatedly, they've failed to keep faith with God. You know the story. After all, these are the children of Israel. They don't call, they don't write, they don't send cards. In spite of all the love lavished on the Israelites, they never have really accepted God's presence. In spite of everything God has done, from miraculous salvation on the shores of the sea to the great revelation at Sinai, the 40 years of manna in the wilderness, the people remain ungrateful and unaware. And now, at the very gateway to the promised land, still they don't get it. To correct this problem, or at least to try, in our portion of Devarim, Deuteronomy, Moses begins to lay out a covenant. It forms the core of his last, best effort to convince our people they should recognize God's presence and keep the faith. "Remember," he says repeatedly, "listen, hear my words, pay attention. God is with you, God cares, have faith." In next week's portion of Vayetchanan, Moses will reach true eloquence. In a perfect phrase, he will make it all astonishingly clear. "Hear, people of Israel, Adonai is our God, and God is one." Shema, listen, hear. So what is hearing really but the auditory awareness of presence, of the voice of another? What is our task but learning how to listen to hear God's whisper in the world? The covenant we're given in Deuteronomy has a mixed reputation today. It's a simple formula, really. If you believe in God and act ethically, you'll be rewarded. If you stray from God's mitzvot, God's commandments, you'll be punished. This form of divine covenant may not play so well today. It promises good things happen to good people and bad things will happen to bad people, which we know from our own experience isn't always or even often true. I'd suggest that a more profound reading teaches us that Moses' real message, the heart of his lesson, is that our fundamental failure is not doing immoral things and being punished for them. It is instead failing to become aware of God's presence in our world. That, of course, is something our ancestors struggled with repeatedly. When they saw great miracles enacted before their eyes, they managed to recognize God's hand in the world. Yet within a few days, as Moses reminds them, they managed to forget God had done much of anything for them at all. As hard as it was for our ancestors to sense God's presence, it's perhaps an even greater challenge today. Today we're bombarded with information of all kinds, by all kinds of devices. Television, email, smartphones, text, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on and on. Today it takes something extra to sense God's presence in the world, and yet, God is here, no farther away than ever before. God is in the intricate ways that life flourishes and changes, in the ways in which we and nature learn and grow, in the blush of new love, in the depth of lifelong devotion, in a child's laugh, in a bubby's hug, a teen's first kiss, in the expanse of the universe and the small magical beauty of an unfolding blossom, in the thunder and lightning of a monsoon. Well, on the week of this first portion of the final book of Torah, may we all learn to listen and sense God's presence everywhere around us. When we return in a moment on this 23rd anniversary show of Two Jewish, our guest and friend Shanna Fold tells us what it was like to experience a missile strike on her own home in Israel and how she has coped. It's an incredible and relevant story. Hear it when we come back in a moment on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
After France and Great Britain made similar announcements, Canada says it will recognize a Palestinian state at the UN General Assembly in September as long as certain conditions are met, Prime Minister Mark Carney announced last week. The deepening suffering of civilians leaves no room for delaying coordinated international action to support peace, security, and the dignity of human life, Carney, a liberal elected in April, said, referring to a hunger crisis in Gaza that appears to have grown acute. The move adds Canada to the UK and France as major world powers announcing plans to recognize a Palestinian state this last week, a sea change among countries with significant Jewish populations. Malta also announced recognition of the Palestinians last week. The moves offer a symbol that some of Israel's allies believe a negotiated peace is out of reach. As with France, Canada's recognition is dependent on assurances from ancient Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, which Prime Minister Carney indicated he had gotten to hold elections next year for the first time in well over two decades, and to exclude Hamas from the elections and any future governance. Unlike British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, Carney did not make recognition dependent on Hamas releasing the Israeli hostages. Starmer is requiring Israel to end its fighting in Gaza. Israel staunchly opposes unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state. It panned Carney's move as rewarding terrorism. Ido Moed, Israel's ambassador to Canada, said, "We will not give in to pressure because this is our security." The announcement drew criticism from Canada's leading Jewish umbrella organization, the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, which said it was deeply concerning that the Prime Minister did not link his plan to the release of the hostages. President Donald Trump threatened a trade retaliation if recognition takes place. Earlier last week, Trump indicated he did not oppose the UK recognition plan, which insisted on release of the hostages. The 22-nation Arab League has signed on to a declaration condemning Hamas's October 7, 2023 attack on Israel, and it now calls for Hamas to disarm. The Arab League includes Qatar and Egypt, which have served as mediators in talks between Israel and Hamas during the subsequent war in Gaza. It also includes Turkey, which has adopted a stance of overt hostility to Israel throughout the war. The Arab League joined the entire European Union and 17 other countries in backing a declaration at a UN meeting hosted by Saudi Arabia and France. The goal included discussion of a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, an objective that not all Arab League states had previously endorsed. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu opposes a two-state solution. His government also attacked the UN confab as a form of appeasement. The U.S. also boycotted the meeting, which was held in New York. A range of voices, including France, the Israeli Hostages and Missing Families Forum, and liberal pro-Israel speakers, heralded the Arab League's participation as a remarkable breakthrough. This declaration comes amid growing signs world leaders are increasingly willing to jolt the conflict's quagmire in new ways. That's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Shanna Fuld, who was in her apartment 3-4 a.m. by that time, having worked all night and changed finally out of her basically cargo pants and boots, and now was finally going to get a little bit of sleep. The siren went off, 90 seconds to get to a shelter. Fill us in on what happened at that point.
So despite having told everyone in the Israel Daily News podcast that the Israel police is calling on everyone to put on closed-toed shoes when they go into the shelter, understanding that they very well might be leaving and there might be glass all over the floor, I didn't have time. I threw on some Velcro sandals that were within reach. I put my laptop in my bag and half zipped it closed, put it behind the couch like always, took a purse with my wallet and a passport in it, and ran upstairs. I got into the safe room of my upstairs neighbor. I just knocked on the door. I had been up in her place 2 hours earlier when we got the first notification from the home front command. And I entered the room, and there was a young woman who was on vacation from France staying with Marisa, sleeping in that room. And there was a friend of Marisa. Marisa is my upstairs neighbor. And Marisa welcomed me in. We all went in there. The lights were off because the young woman in bed was sleeping, and they didn't bother to turn it on. I think everybody thought that it was going to be a routine siren while you wait until you get an all clear. Now, keep in mind, I'm the only one in this situation who had seen the destruction and really understood that these rockets are coming down and they're hitting things. I am silent. I start recording audio because it's very dark and I'm a journalist, and I had been recording a lot of video, but up until this point, the energy I had was to press the record on the audio. I start recording. Two of the women that I'm with begin reciting Tehillim, which are Psalms, and they're praying. I'm silent, holding my breath, and we hear a whipping past the window of the Mamad, which is a safe room. The handle of the window blows off the window.
Oh, my God.
Shoots across the room, hits the wall, and the young woman who was on vacation in Israel starts screaming and wailing. The building rocks to the right. I'm holding my breath. I'm saying to myself, we're going to come back to center. We're going to come back to center. The building does, in fact, come back to center. And we hear the loudest boom that I've ever heard in my life that clearly indicated to me that it was either our building or it was the building next door. And some smoke and dust and soot starts entering the room. And I'm just thinking it's temporary. I don't know, you know, I don't know what it is, but I had a positive-ish mindset. But I'm, by the way, just, I'm thinking very clearly. I'm sharp. I'm running on adrenaline. I had been awake, which I think was an advantage for me at that point. And this young woman from France is screaming and having a panic. And I'm just quiet because I'm listening, because I'm thinking this building is going to collapse. And I want to hear the cracks and creaks as it's happening because I need to be aware. So I tell everybody at a certain point when I find a positive way to share it that we're in serious trouble, that we need to be quiet, we need to use our brains, and that the more we talk, the more difficult it's going to be for us to pay attention to what's going on. Eventually, my boyfriend, who was in his home at the time, is calling me and tells me that what's going on. I tell him I think that we were hit or something was hit nearby, everything's okay. He calls me again. He jumped on a rental scooter and gets over to the apartment building and lets me know that he's downstairs. He calls me again. He says, I'm downstairs. I'm outside. It does not look good out here. It looks very bad. Everything is broken. It was you, meaning like it was here. And I kind of know this, but I didn't want to hear that it was very bad. But he's telling me it's very bad. And he ended up telling me that he saw people with blood on their face and somebody was laid out on the ground. And he was traumatized from knowing I was inside the building. And thanks to him, he is forcefully indicating to emergency responders that I'm inside the building with a group of other women and that they need to get inside. And the reason that he's able to share this is because I was the one to decide that I was going to open up the door. My upstairs neighbor had said something about, I don't remember what she said, but she said something about the rest of the building. And I say to her, if there is a rest of the building, and she's laughing because she doesn't really understand that it was probably us. I pop that door open of the Mamad, and everything is destroyed in the doorway. The ceiling is on the floor, the light fixture is broken, and the lights are off, but I can tell that everything is messed up and that the building had been hit. Turns out that the missile actually hit about 30 meters outside of the building in an empty parking lot that somehow, by the grace of God, nobody had been parked inside. And so the truth is that if it had been our building, the Mamad probably wouldn't have saved us. It helped. It protected us. Nothing was able to drop on us. The floor didn't, the ceiling didn't drop on us, whatever. We were safe in there, thank God. But there were some people that had a direct hit on the building and they were inside the safe room and they weren't safe. So the emergency responders, thanks to my boyfriend, Raphael, him insisting that they get up in there, come up because the issue was that our front door of the apartment was dented and busted, as was all of the doors in the building was dented and busted. So they had to knock that door down. It took them several attempts and several different team members to do it. They brought us down the stairs, which were full of glass, but intact. They walked us down, and I took a peek at my apartment. It looked like there was a flood in there because there was, and the door was busted up. But instead of going in there, I thought for safety reasons, I was told also not to go to try to get into the apartment and go out. And I ended up walking out into a sea of reporters and locals and neighbors and people with stores on the block with their head in their hands, shocked. A CNN colleague of mine approached me, and I needed a few minutes, but I ultimately gave him an interview. I spoke with a couple of other known community members of mine and eventually started making my way to a friend's home and sort of went to two different friends in the area, didn't make any calls, just showed up, knocked on their door and tried to regroup myself as much as I could. I only had what was on me, my pajamas, my bag, I didn't have any clothes, I didn't have anything. And as far as I was concerned, everything was gone. I didn't even think I had one item to come back to. I did come back to my apartment a few hours later. They did let me go up. The first thing I noticed was that my jewelry box was empty next to the front door. Looters had gotten in and stolen every piece of jewelry that I own, including pieces from loved ones who are no longer with us any longer. That's been very difficult for me. And then that's when the process started of needing to clean up and spearhead this project myself and tell people what I, had to hire movers to come in and try to get some stuff out. I tried to salvage things. I laundered clothes for 3 weeks. Everything was dirty and covered in soot. This is a big, big project. And everybody's been asking me, how are you? And I say, I'll let you know when I'm out of this. I'm still in this project now. It's been 5 weeks.
Israel, or does the state provide hotel? Like, what happens? Because obviously you need a place to stay, and with whatever you have.
I don't want to get into the details too much because it's not 100% clear to me, even though I've had 5 or 6 conversations with the authorities. I am still paying rent to my landlord in exchange for being put up in a hotel.
For an apartment that doesn't exist anymore.
Correct.
So, obviously, this has happened to literally thousands of Israelis now about a month ago, right? People think that, and the war obviously was militarily successful for Israel, but are there still sirens going off now?
Yes, there are. We had a Houthi missile a few days ago that I ran down from my hotel room into the safe space. It's not happening as much.
Right.
But there are.
Shanna, look, our sympathy is with you. I can't say we empathize because we don't experience that here. This is, by the way, in Tel Aviv, right? This is not in some border area, right? It's in the middle of everything. I promise you will find an apartment and be able to reestablish. I want to note that even though your studio was completely destroyed, you've continued to broadcast. Tell people where they can hear you.
You can hear my show on Spotify, Google Podcasts, any podcast platform. And I'm also uploading now a video version to YouTube and Spotify. So if you're on Spotify, you could actually see my face. I started doing that this year. If you want to connect with me and hear the news coming out of Israel, that's a great way you can do it.
That's what you need, because you can find out really what's going on, not necessarily what you hear in the various media outlets or online, which is, I promise, not nearly as accurate as what Shanna Fall does. Shanna, thank you for being here, and best of luck in finding a new location.
Thank you very much.
When we come back on Too Jewish on this anniversary edition, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish as we start our 24th year. Our guest will be Shirley Russick, author of The Baker of Lost Memories. And please join us tonight at Pastrami and Schmaltz at 6 p.m. at the Unscrewed Theater for musical improv and kosher pastrami sandwiches. Our play out this morning on this 23rd anniversary edition of Too Jewish is Out of Season. It's in memory, though, of the recently late, great Tom Lehrer, his wonderful Hanukkah in Santa Monica. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
I'm spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica, wearing sandals, lighting candles by the sea. I spent Shavuos in East St. Louis, a charming spot, but clearly not the spot for me. Those eastern winters, I can't endure 'em. So every year I pack my gear and come out here till Purim. Rosh Hashanah I spend in Arizona, and Yom Kippur way down in Mississippi. But in December there's just one place for me. Amid the California flora, I'll be lighting my menorah. Like a baby in his cradle, I'll be playing with my dreidel. Spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica by the sea.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.
I'm spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica, wearing sandals, lighting candles by the sea.